when we get to the results section, we can look at the p-value document that Tara sent. Does that sound good?
Okay.
And thank you for working on those, Tara, on such short notice. So I am looking at the Surge paper February 29th as the most recent version, which I believe had everyone's changes reflected. There were a few places where there were some comments where if I felt that I could kind of address all the comments and tweak it, I just went ahead and did that and then deleted the comments so that we would have less to look at today. And I figured we'll have to do a final once-over before we go to submit this, and then if there were any issues, we could pick them up then. So I think the first kind of substantive comment that's still in the document is on page 3, at the bottom of page 3, where it talks about probability, how students understand probability.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. That was kind of mine. What's that? Yeah, if I remember correctly, in the study, it was basically they were using their own experience to decide if it's going to rain today, and that was why we included it.
Yeah.
I'm fine taking it out if you just feel it. I mean, it is a pretty old citation, 1989. No, I don't think there was. I think the actual point of the paper was more about understanding of probability versus what we were looking at. It is cited a lot in the other study that we did cite. You know what I mean? It's referenced a lot in some of these other ones that we looked at, like Rothman and all the rest of it. But we cited Connell quite a bit. So.
Here's my take with this. You know, everything else we've been talking about thus far deals with interpreting the results of a statistical study, whereas this deals with interpreting probability. And I think there is a fair amount of additional research that discusses that probability is really its own beast. And one of the things that students struggle with in this realm, which is funny because I have never seen it attributed to experience necessarily, perhaps it is, but people tend to turn probabilities into dichotomous outcomes. So a probability over 0.5 means the event is going to happen. A probability under 0.5 means the event won't happen. And to me, that was always just a misunderstanding that seemed unique to probabilities, and I've never really attributed it to experience. Like I said, maybe I was misunderstanding it, but I think we either need to make the role of experience clearer in this paragraph or just go ahead and delete it. I think we have got a lot of citations without it. And like I said, probability is kind of its own beast, its own special category that comes with its own special difficulties. So,
well, actually, if I remember correctly, this paper actually built, do you know Common and Diversity, I can never pronounce their names right, the two people in the 70s that did a lot of work with probability. This actually builds on a couple of their theories that they came up with. One of them is that students will base probability on their own experiences. The one that you're talking about is another one that they do. They have a couple different heuristics that they came up with. This one is Connell did some more work based on what they had done, looking at how students understand probability. And one of them is that they do base it on their own experiences. So, the probability of someone having a heart attack, they really relate that to, okay, how often do I know someone
who has had a heart attack?
That's had a heart attack. They don't look at the numbers. They look at something in their own life. I suppose that really is kind of, we're sort of going off track there a little bit in terms of what we're looking at. I put it in because it has sort of, pulling from your own experience, pulling from non-statistical ideas. I think we are kind of veering a little off track there. So I'm actually fine taking it out. I don't know if Jackie or Tara have an opinion one way or another.
I'm okay with taking it out.
Okay.
I'm indifferent.
All right.
All right.
I think then, since what we need is we need this paper submitted, and I think we have a lot of great citations without it. That's why I'm comfortable taking it out. So I've deleted it.
Okay.
All right. So from there, for a few pages, most of the comments just dealt with blinding. And then I think the next comment that might require our discussion, still scrolling. There was a quote, an example of context in the testing results on page 16. At least I think it's page 16. I did just delete a paragraph, but it wasn't a very long one. So page 16, give or take. You'll notice that one thing I did was go through and try and make it a little bit more descriptive in terms of what the scenarios and the samples were. So this is now the 5th bullet, texting while driving scenario with bias sampling. And I think because it is biased sampling, this student is pointing out a possible source of bias here. And so I think it actually seems like good reasoning. And since we've already got a bunch of other quotes on texting, I'm wondering if, again, we should just delete it. It's kind of long. It's the quote that starts, it's the second to last texting with driving scenario. I agree with it that texting while driving definitely increases accidents, but I feel like it doesn't say exactly who is driving these U-Hauls. I feel like that part, starting from but down to verified answer, I think actually shows good reasoning. And then he's trying to, like, offer a suggestion. It's not the best suggestion in the world, but he's trying to offer a suggestion of how you could have designed a better study that would have been protected against that bias. So to me, I think this is either – well, I think it's actually an example of good reasoning because this was the biased sample.
I guess the reason why I probably included this one is because – especially because it's their opinion and they feel younger are more likely to be texting in the first place, and so that's not documented anywhere in that study. That seems more opinion.
I think it's kind of a mix. That was the piece that I pull out when I read that too, the if it's younger, they're more likely to be texting part.
Well, and I would say, I think actually it's not necessarily a bad thing to have one that's not necessarily clear. You can argue with me if you want. If they're all, like, really clear one way or another, then it kind of looks like we...
But it's kind of possible that someone that had, like, a mixed answer. Yeah. They have some good things, they have some not so good things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah.
We could elaborate on it after it and just state mixed answer, and we could put the if it's younger portion in italics or something.
Because, I mean, we do say later that, these are all answers from tests, and we said later that it was difficult to figure out what a student, where they were coming from in terms of their reasoning, and I think this actually provides a good example of that.
These are interviews, though. These aren't the test ones.
Oh, these are the interview ones?
Yeah.
Oh, oops. Sorry. Never mind.
Oh, sorry. I think I said they were the testing ones. But, yeah, texting was actually interviews. You're right. All right. Well, I will go ahead. I'll delete my comment, and we will leave it in there, and we can decide we can decide if we want to elaborate on it more. Although, as we've, so so far right now, we haven't really emphasized anything with the quotes for the most part because a lot of them were self-explanatory. So I'm a little leery about emphasizing things in one quote but not in other quotes. Like, I feel like the way we treat the quote should be equal. So I'm okay. I see what you guys are pulling out of there. What was funny, when I read that, I was like, you know, it's kind of weird that he's assuming that the people in the, like, professional truck drivers would be younger than people who rent cars. Like, I thought that was bizarre. So maybe it was my own bias kind of looking at this, just being like, it's just a weird answer. But I'm outvoted here, so I'll delete my comment. We'll leave it in for now. And for the sake of moving on to more pressing matters, we'll move on. So going down to the discussion, there was a comment. Tara had a comment about the number of people who had given that zero U.S., who had given that p-value answer.
Yes, I tried to look up to figure out how I got it, and now I cannot find it.
Okay.
So I'm going to trust Tara's results because I went and double-checked, and now that's what I'm getting as well.
All right, so you think it should say 69? Where'd my cursor go? All right. So 69, which is about 30%. All right. So that change has been made. So the up next is the comment about the p-values for the tables and context. So do we want to switch over to Tara's p-value document then for a minute?
Sure.
Has anyone else had a chance to look at this since Tara sent it?
Yeah.
Only a little.
I started, well, first of all, I couldn't figure out how to do the three-way contingency table, analyzing everything at once in SAS. I've never done that. Anytime we've ever done three-way contingency tables, we've always broken them out. So I'm still seeing if I can do the three-way table.
What do you mean three-way?
The way that we have them in our paper,
mm-hmm.
They're three-way tables because we have hold on, let me go back up there.
I guess like strength of their opinion, sample type, and question, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, we would have, so like if I put the table, I would have a strong agree with a random with a yes, a strong agree with a random with a no, a strong agree with a biased with a yes, a strong agree with a biased with a no.
What do you mean yes and no?
Irrelevant context.
I thought Fisher's exact test, like yes and no aren't dimensions. The irrelevant context would just be the count in the table.
Right, but I would have to have three, and then I would have to have another entry that had the difference between the 18 and the three. I have to have a total. I have to be able to give them a total number somehow.
Sorry, I'm pulling up one of the tables real quick to look at. Where'd it go?
If you look at the document, the way that I have it set up underneath with the table that has a strong agree, yes and no. Actually, I only need one strong agree, but strong agree, yes and no, strong disagree, yes and no, neutral, yes and no.
Okay. Can you run it with the percent as opposed to the raw count?
Not if you want me to do a chi-square table, I can't. Or a chi-square.
Yeah, no.
I need count data for that. What I did initially was for each of the rows, I compared the percents directly using a z-test. That's the first set of results that you see.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got concerned because we didn't have huge counts. So I wasn't sure if it was appropriate to use the z-test given our counts.
I haven't done this test in a long time, so I'm just stating that right away. There is a Cochran-Mansell-Hansel method.
Yes.
That does the 2x2x K table.
Yes, that's the three-way table. That's what I was trying to remember how to do in SAS. That's what I'm trying to remember how to do it. But that's not the, that compares, hold on. I had pulled out some of my SAS code from one of my, what?
Given Z.
The CMH test works best when the XY association is similar in each partial table. So it's still, it divides it up into the partial tables, I think, initially. But I have the,
I knew categorical data analysis would come in handy at one day in my life.
The Cochran-Mansell-Hansel uses the LOGIT that uses the probability that Y equals 1 stuff. So I'll have to play around with the tables to see if I can do it. I know I have examples of SAS code for that test. I just need to find them. It was a few years ago, so.
I'll also see. We have a SAS consultant in the department, and I'll see if I can pop in on her today and ask her. What?
Yeah, I used R for my categorical class, so I'm not helpful there.
I have the. I have the code. I just need to figure out how to set up the table to use the code because the back of my categorical book shows how to set up the code for the CMH, the test. Doing the LOGIT modeling, I just need to figure out how to get the table set up. And I'm sure I must have examples somewhere of it. I just need to find them. But that wasn't going to happen before we met today. So for the purposes of our meeting, just to see kind of what we were getting at, I looked at whether or not we could collapse across the random and the biased for the individuals, and I looked at two different tests. I did the z-test to compare the two proportions at each row, and then I also, if you look at the bottom of the first page, I also set up a table that had bias and random count data, and I ran a Fisher's test on the bias and random counts data. So I did them both ways. And then if it was okay to collapse across table across samples, then I set it up so that we had a strong agree, strong disagree, neutral with the total count data. I don't know why I have duplicates of my SASDNN, but.
Okay.
So basically I ran multiple tests. until I could figure out how to put them all together. But at any rate, my multiple tests didn't really give me anything interesting.
Well, if we can't figure out the Cochrane mantle handle thing, then I think that might be a reasonable way to approach it. Is first, we're going to look across type of sample, and then we'll collapse across. If we see nothing there, we'll collapse across type of sample and look at strengths and direction of conclusion.
Right. I also looked within the individual samples of types. I looked at the random across the strong agree, strong disagree, neutral, and the biased across strong agree, strong disagree, neutral for each of them also. So if you look under the Fisher's test, there's three different p-values. There's a Fisher's test on combined data, which is using the total count data, and then I also ran them separately for random and biased. But like I said, there's really nothing here. The t-test gave me, or the z-test gave me some interesting stuff for MACPC for difference between the biased and the sample, random sample. And the tuition data, I've got some funky thing going on because my combined data, I'm getting a significance, and my uncombined data, I'm not. So I have some sort of...
You have a Simpsons paradox.
Yes, I do. But I can't figure out why because we're not that different when we look at the table. Our distributions aren't that different, so I'm not sure why I have it going on.
Okay.
But yes, then the next step is to run the Cochrane mantle Hansel test, and that's what I had started working on just before the call.
Okay. Well, we'll continue to look in that. I will see if I can pop in on our staff person, too, and if I find out anything, if I'm able to talk to her today and I find out anything, I'll email the group.
Yeah. Like I said, I know how to type the code. The problem is I need to figure out how to put the data in to be able to use the code.
All right. That is what I will ask her then. All right, so we will set aside that for now. But for the most part, I feel like we have a good discussion of tables 5 to 7. I would just like to be able to kind of put, I think, some sort of p-value with it. So we'll continue to work on that. And then also table 8, again, if we could put, well, once we get them for 5 and 7, I think we'll be able to do them for 8.
Yeah.
And then the other thing for table 8 was that was actually one of the tables, and maybe it's not table 8. Maybe we just need to look at opinions by school. But one of the questions I kind of had was thinking about results by school, did one of the schools tend to have more opinionated students? So I guess if we were to look at table 8 by school, that would not only give us a sense of kind of who was opinionated, but then that would also give us a sense of if that translated into more context at the different schools. Looking at tables 5, 6, and 7 by school, I didn't see a lot of differences. There were some cases where I think NC State students tended to use a little bit lower context, or Jackie students tended to use a little bit higher context. I need to look at those values again and see, because I can't remember exactly where Tara's students fell out in that, in what I was looking at. I'm pulling my notes from yesterday.
Were you using the PowerPoint that had the results by school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was. And I checked for the irrelevant context and responses. The overall tables matched the overall table in the PowerPoint matched tables 5 through 7. So I assumed that was the most recent results, and so I looked at those. When you get to the tables that deal with the actual codes themselves, that the overall table there did not match what was presented in the paper. So I didn't look at the ones by school because I assumed we had done some updating or some changing or something like that since that had been run.
Which ones didn't match?
I'm
looking at the PowerPoint. You're talking about the ones?
So the slide, like, coding results for luggage scenario, there was, oh, wait, maybe I was looking at these wrong.
Because those were by school.
Oh, you didn't have an overall one in there.
No, those were by school.
No, that's funny, because you had the overall one with irrelevant context, and so I just assumed the first one for the luggage, okay.
No, I didn't.
Oh, all right. So
those
are the current ones. All right. We can look at those then. I can look at them today, and everyone else can look and see if they think they see a difference. So what we need is we need table 9 from the paper and then the 4 luggage scenario tables from the PowerPoint. Yeah, I totally missed that yesterday. Sorry. But I'm not either way. I'm not seeing huge differences by school. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. To some extent, we were speculating that we might see differences by school because we were imagining that our institutions were very difficult. Or not difficult, different.
I'll go with difficult.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
So maybe I think what we are seeing is in some sense a robustness of the results in terms of the testing environment. We're seeing a robustness of results.
Well, and weirdly, I don't know why I'm just thinking about this. Did we ever do anything across gender?
No. We did look across schools right last July, and I think we had decided then that we weren't seeing any differences, but we never did across gender.
I'm just wondering, because, I mean, if Carla is saying that she might have seen more context from my students, then it also makes me wonder if it has to do with that mine was primarily male or not. Of like the one that didn't fit the gender bill.
That's possible.
I mean, it makes me wonder if the guys have a tendency to be more opinionated than the girls.
Actually, one of the questions where I was seeing more context from your students was Mac PC, so that's entirely possible.
Or we can look at it. That's easy to run.
All right, that sounds good. And then, and going back and looking at this now in the morning as opposed to at night, I am seeing that it does happen. I see cases for both Mac PC and luggage. Tuition, I think, tuition's hard to read because everything was just driven by that p-value. So I'm not too concerned about tuition there, but... I am noticing the biggest differences for Mac PC with random sampling and then also with biased sampling. So that might very well be a gender-driven difference there. So we will look at that. And then I think what I can do is just add a statement in the conclusion that results were robust across different types of institution. And then just say, you know, table's not shown.
In the discussion or in the results?
In the discussion. Well, no, maybe I'll just put a sentence at the end of the results and just say the above tables were also explored. Yeah, I guess I'll do results. What do you guys think? Kind of a one sentence at the bottom of, well, I don't know. We don't currently really have any discussion in the results section right now.
No, because we took it all out.
Yeah, so maybe discussion would be the better place when we discuss tables. 5 to 7, I'll mention that we did also explore them by school and by gender. And I'll point out if we did or did not see any differences there. But I still don't think we have to really show those tables. Unless we're finding something highly significant, then maybe we should show the table. But if we're not finding anything significant, I don't think we need to show the table. All right. So still a little bit more work to be done in results, but I think we are closing in. I went through... So with the discussion, basically what I did was I tried to make the discussion longer. I think we had done too good of a job of distilling it down to the take-home points, and so I just went through and actually expanded it a little bit more and put back in some more of that actual thought process and discussion that led to those take-home points. And a lot of that was coming... A lot of most of the text I added, since we didn't have p-values for those other tables, I didn't talk too much about them because I didn't feel like I could say, well, this is or is not a significant difference, so I'm waiting to add more to the discussion there. Most of what I added was coming from the document that I wrote up a while ago, looking at the actual codes themselves and trying to discuss what we did or did not see between there. So I went back and added that in here. So at this point, going back to the paper and looking on page 18, there's a comment. There was a p-value that was given for a comparison of the 46 test environment scenarios and the 32 interview scenarios. What percent of the responses contained irrelevant context, and it was significantly higher. Now, this same information was in two different parts of the paper,
mm-hmm.
and in one place it gave a p-value that seemed to me like a test of two proportions, and then in the other case it actually gave an estimated relative risk and then a confidence interval on that relative risk,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm wondering exactly what the test was that we conducted, or were there multiple tests?
I did the... p-value, and that was comparing the proportions.
Okay.
Jackie did all the relative risk stuff, so.
And that p-value was attached to the relative risk.
I don't actually see a p-value, I think, attached to the relative risk, or maybe.
I think you did a confidence interval, Jackie.
Yeah. I've never worked with risks before. Relative risks. So, an estimated relative risk, what does that tell you?
It's the risk of the one group over the risk of the other. So, one would be that they're equal.
Okay. So, what did you do on top here?
I have to look at it again.
Well, if it's high, so I guess it would make sense that if it's a big value, the top should be testing, right?
Yeah, I think it's six. The testing scenarios, the students were 6.4 times more likely to use irrelevant context. I think that's...
Interviews on top.
Or the interviews, sorry, yeah.
So basically a relative risk here would be like that 72% divided by 11%.
Yeah, sorry. Okay.
So it's like an odds ratio, kind of.
Well, what do we want? Do we want difference in proportion, or do we want relative risk?
Well, if we're going to do the Cochrane-Mantle, the CMA test, I think that's a test of relative risk.
So maybe do relative risk here, too. I kind of like the idea of saying they were this much more likely.
Well, I think we can put them both. We can say that we found that this was a significant result, so we calculated the relative risk and found that they were 6.545 times more likely.
Okay. So just say a significant higher percentage for the testing scenarios, parentheses, and then have the p-values in parentheses, and then say something like, in fact, we found that students were 6.54 more times likely to use a relevant context, and then maybe we could put the confidence interval in parentheses after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Looks good.
Yes, I like relative risk.
I've always associated it with biostatistics.
That's what I associate it with, too.
Well, it probably helped that I just taught a categorical class last semester, you know, so.
I need to start teaching stuff like that. I've been teaching intrastat for so long. The only thing I'm going to be able to use is a t-test soon. That
yeah,
quite frankly
yeah.
scares me. In fact. All right, I will tweak the wording of the relative risk sentence, but I think we have some good results there now. Thank you, ladies, for explaining that.
Hold on. Jackie, do you remember, does CMH, does it test odds ratio or does it does relative risk?
I believe it's odds ratio.
Because then should we be calculating odds ratios there?
Well, I mean, we can do both, but what I've found from generalization here is that people understand relative risk better than they do odds ratios. It's because you're able to say that more likely, and you can't do that with odds ratios.
Right.
But
so then should we not
add
do?
Those two have them mixed, because odds ratios and relative risk will get used at the same time. But I don't necessarily think that would be bad to have both. I feel like we can't force the CMH test to do a relative risk, even though I prefer it to. But I mean, I've just found even just from, you know, student understanding, they can mimic an odds ratio interpretation, but they really don't get it.
Right.
And it always feels inflated because it's always bigger than relative risk would be.
All right.
It's my own opinion, of course, but
I think it is okay to mix things here. I think, in fact, using a variety of analytic techniques between what makes sense technically and what is interpretable, I think is actually a good procedure, and probably people should do more of it.
Do you teach the Breslow Day test, Jackie?
No.
Because Breslow Day is designed specifically to test the homogeneity of odds ratios, so maybe that would be the better way to go for those.
Maybe.
The CMH test is conditional independence. And then the Breslow Day specifically tests the homogeneity of odds ratios. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm pulling up my book. Let me look.
Well, Breslow Day, I guess, is more like a goodness of fit model, and the CMH test is more like the independence test. So I guess maybe CMH test is what we want because we don't really want to do a goodness of fit.
Yeah, I think we want more independence and goodness of fit. We don't really have a model in mind to start. So, yeah, I would do goodness of fit.
And we want conditional independence. Because what I've done, I think, has tested more of the marginal independence because I combined over. So the CMH test will give us conditional. All right.
It looks like in here, and again, I'm just reading my book, if there's an exact test for conditional independence for a 2x2 by K table.
It's not the CMH?
No, because it says that depends upon the cell count.
What's
exact
the
exact test, though? There actually might be a Fisher's exact test for it. I can't find out how to do it. and says they use StatExact for it.
I don't have StatExact.
I'm not sure.
I don't even know what StatExact is.
Do you happen to have an introduction to categorical data analysis by Agresti?
By Agresti?
Yeah, by Agresti.
That's what I'm looking at.
I'm looking at 3.3.1.
Oh, I'm in 4.3.4. You're in 3.3.1?
Yes.
Okay. What edition do you have?
This is like the first.
Okay, but he changed the order, so I'm in the right spot.
Blue one.
Okay. You're in the Cochran-Mantel-Hensel test for 2x2x k contingency tables.
Yes, I'm in that area.
Yes.
So there's 3.2 is that, and there's 3.3 after it. That's exact inference.
He took it out of this edition. It's not in here.
Shame on him.
Yeah, it's not in my edition.
So it looks like I use a multi-hypergeometric distribution.
But that's what Fisher's does. It uses the hypergeometric.
So that is a three-dimensional one versus two.
What's the name
I think
of this
if
thing?
You just do CMH and you do exact, that might work. If you tell it to you, do exact.
Probably. I would think so.
What is Whatley?
No, never mind. I'll stay out of it. I'm not going to help, so.
Feel free to join in if you have something else.
No, not really. I really don't.
All right. Well, like I said, I have the way that I would set the 3x3 table, I have it set up in SAS, but I need to figure out if I can use the way I set it up to run the CMH test. So. But we digress.
Sorry.
So for the comment we were actually talking about, we'll keep the p-value that compared the two proportions.
And then the confidence interval for the relative risk.
Yes, and we'll keep them separate. And then hopefully we'll have more data there.
That sounds good. The next comment going through is down, now the order of this might have changed slightly. I'm going to say page 19 it's going to be on.
So does this mean a rating of 7?
Yes.
It means a strong opinion with which the conclusion agrees. So it didn't necessarily mean a 7. It depended on the scenario.
Okay, that's what I wanted to check because that's what I thought at first, but then I thought something else. All right, so...
And that I coded in the SAS based on, do you remember the document that, it was a conference call I missed because it was my mom was in the hospital. But you guys went through and determined what was strong agreement and strong disagree, which codes went for each scenario question. You guys remember doing that?
Vaguely.
So then I coded that into SAS, and I categorized them based on strongly agree, strongly disagree, or neutral based on those. So it depended on the way the question was worded on the questionnaire along with what the conclusion was of the scenario they received.
I will reword that so it's more consistent with what the tables say. And then going through, I actually added a quote. This was the only change, the only substantive change as opposed to really like organizational change I made to the interview section, when I was reading through the interviews, I thought there was one quote, one of Tara's students, I think, that was actually really interesting because it almost seemed to point at that the student was recognizing there was this distinction between statistical reasoning and contextual reasoning and opinions. And so I kind of pulled that quote out and highlighted that part of it there. So that's the now third quote that's just in sort of paragraph form in the interviews.
We'll have to find a different way to highlight it, though, because we're not allowed to have underlining in the paper.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I will read
no
it.
Bold and no underlining, other than the section headings and stuff.
Oh, I was going to say, we do have bold. Well, then we'll just have to highlight it in the discussion, which part of the quote we're looking at.
Yeah.
I will highlight that in the paper now and come back to it later. Then there was, again, there was a place where we seem to have the same sort of thing presented in two different manners. In one case, it compared scenarios, testing scenarios to interview scenarios. In another case, it compared people.
Right. We did two different things.
But it's seems like they were getting at the same type of argument. And one of the things I'm not sure it has here, and maybe actually thinking about how to handle those three-way tables will help with this, but it doesn't quite get at the subtlety of sort of the three-way interaction we were looking at. So we might have to wait on this a little because I'm wondering if this is actually what we want. It might depend on whether we can get anything more sophisticated or whether this is the best we can do.
Go ahead, Jackie.
I'm actually thinking about the comment that I have here where the first comment that's listed next to the highlighted section on the bottom, either bottom of page 19 or maybe top of page 20. Where this is just looking at the type of sampling dimension. And maybe that's all we'll be able to do is just break it down dimension by dimension. But maybe if we can get something that's a little more sophisticated, which is what we're starting to think about with the tables 5 through 7, maybe we can get something more sophisticated here as well.
But these aren't the 9 of the 16 students, that was specifically the paired results.
Okay.
So I think this got split up.
Whereas the scenarios is not specifically the paired results?
When we get down to, we did two different types of analyses. One, we looked at the data overall, and we compared overall the percentage of students that used your relevant context and the bias versus the random, and we compared overall the use of your relevant context in the interviews versus the test setting. Then what we did was we looked student by student to see if there were any scenarios that they were given in both the test and the interview setting where they had the same level of agreement and strength. So were there two settings where they were strongly agreed? Were there two where they strongly disagreed? Were there two where they were neutral? And where they also had the same type of sample, the random versus the bias sample. So when we talk about the 9 of the 16 students, hold on, where's the paired stuff? So I'm trying to find it. They reorganized. this stuff in here is all mixed up. So the two paragraphs at the end go with the... paragraph that starts with the remainder of the discussion focuses on blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right, Jackie?
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
then after we did all that overview, then we specifically looked at the paired. Which is the next paragraph. So this is split up. I don't know.
There were 16 students who are interviewed overall, right?
Yes. That's...
So then I don't think we want to say 9 of the 16 again. I think we want to say of the 9 for whom the scenario is matched, this many used irrelevant context.
That's what we have in that paragraph.
Not in the part that I've, not in the part that I've commented on that's gotten, well, there are several comments on it.
But what I'm saying is this I don't think should be down here. It goes with the stuff further up above. I think splitting it out like that and putting it at the very end makes it more confusing.
I agree. But I think part of the reason I was confused to start with and moved it is because it doesn't seem like it's only talking about the paired students. It's not saying of the 9. It's saying of the 16, which is different. So maybe the first... So I'm on the paragraph where there's evidence to suggest increased use of irrelevant context. And then there's the section that's commented. There is no evidence of an association between sample type and the use of irrelevant context. 9 of the 16 students used irrelevant context. That, to me, is not the matched paired students. Are you saying
that is not the matched paired students. You're correct. That's why I said it goes with the paragraph above that talks about the overall. It goes with the 95% confidence interval paragraph. It should go after that. That's what I'm saying.
All right. So this goes... All right, so after the 95% confidence. And then there's the other paragraph. So the second paragraph then.
There was a paragraph that I had put, that I had crossed through because I had rewritten it. Did you take that out or did you keep it in here?
I took it out because you said you had rewritten it, so I went with the more recent version of it.
Okay, because it looks like they're still both in here. That's what I was asking.
No, I took that paragraph out, and then I still think there was some duplication in beyond that. What I'm looking at now is the paragraph. It's highlighted as a comment. It says, when comparing to see if there was a difference in the use of irrelevant context for these students between biased and random samples, it was found that the students used irrelevant context in 13 of the 37 biased scenarios and in 15 of the 41 random scenarios.
That's the overall, too.
Okay. That's what I thought. So those are both overall. And then I guess my further question with all of this is, and maybe we can't answer this today, but is can we do better than just comparing biased versus random? Because, Tara, you had had a comment where you said, I think this should go first to say that we didn't see any difference in random versus bias, so we aggregated across those.
Right.
But that's sort of the same question we're having with tables 5 through 7. And so I think I think we should wait to see if we can do, if we actually can get something that's more sophisticated than just bias versus random, because what we had originally talked about really was, in some sense, a three-way interaction.
Well, that's why I then decided to pair them. That was why that was my next step, because I didn't think that we were getting enough out of the biased and just comparing the biased and the random and the overall interview versus test. That was not to get at the three-way, but that was why I then had paired them.
Okay.
To try to look more in depth at what was going on.
Okay. So I think there's two, in my mind, there's still two issues here. The first is, do we want either of the commented paragraphs in here? And we can move them back up if we need to. I've kind of separated them out because I wasn't sure where they should go. And then if we decide we do, I guess I don't understand the distinction. I mean, it seems to me like they're both dealing with the students who had the interviews and test data, and they present the same information. One's just done in terms of counts of students, and one's done in terms of counts of scenarios. And so I'm wondering if we need both still. How about, here's my suggestion. Let's figure out what we're doing to analyze tables 5 through 8. And then we'll see if that can come back and help clarify the flow of this thought process as well. Because I do like, Tara, what you said about basically first comparing, you know, seeing what dimensions can we collapse across and then going through the rest of the discussion.
But I don't know that we can do that same type of analysis for the interview data, because the interview data is paired data. That's why I ultimately ended up doing the paired analysis.
But the paragraphs that I'm questioning are not the paired data. They're the overall data.
Right, but that's what I'm wondering, if it's appropriate even to do those analyses for those paragraphs, because we do, in fact, have paired data. So is it appropriate to look at the overall results?
I don't know.
That's what I was questioning.
I think I am fine with taking the overall out.
That's why I think the first of those two paragraphs, though, is better, because you are then looking at it at a student-by-student basis.
Right.
So between the two, I think the first one is better for the paired idea.
Yeah.
That the second one, we aren't taking into account that paired idea, so that one might not be something we want to include.
So out of those two, we can at least delete the second one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we want to move the first one up and... Yeah, I guess we can add it after the confidence interval and then lead into the next paragraph.
I think part of why I also don't think this fits is this entire, like, up until now, this section where we, from where we say we're going to focus on those 16 who had test and interview, the comparison is test versus interview. But this comparison is bias versus random, which I'm assuming aggregates over both test and interview.
But it's student by student, yeah.
But it's a different comparison than everything else in the paper. Well, everything else from that point on in the discussion. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, all the other paragraphs are test versus interview, test versus interview. Now, this is bias versus random, and that's not even within the test and interview dimensions.
It's combined across the two for each student.
Right. But I think I don't think it fits in with the flow of everything else, because everything else is test versus interview, whereas this is the only paragraph that aggravates over test and interview.
But I think that it's also the only paragraph where we actually have data for the same students who have had biased versus random samples that we're comparing. Maybe we need to go back and do that for the test data.
You mean separate out test and interview?
No, I mean for the overall test results. Did we compare for the same students if they were more likely to use biased versus, if they were more likely to use irrelevant context and biased versus random samples? Did we do that for the test results overall?
Well, we do have table 8, which is sort of our somewhat paired. It's the closest thing we get to paired in the testing environment. It's table 8. And in that case.
But that was overall.
What do you mean overall?
That was looking at the overall data. So overall, if a student had a strong opinion for all three contexts.
Right. That's the only way we can make that sort of paired comparison of bias versus random. Because if we look within a particular context, they only saw one type of sample. We have to aggregate over context in order to compare for the same student where they're more likely to use it in bias versus random.
Well, that's where you can use the total of the last row of table 8, right? So
again,
you just the overall number of students who used context in a random scenario versus the overall that used context in a biased scenario. Is that correct? Or is that no?
No, that's what it is. And there,
I'm just looking at the numbers. Those aren't going to be significant.
Yeah, it does look fairly even. It doesn't seem like that matters.
So are we saying that for the interview data, we don't want to do the comparison?
If we were to do it, I think if we did it first, that way they know why we're not breaking things up later. Kind of why we're ignoring the random versus bias later.
Well, yeah, my comment was going to be, I mean, I understand Tara's point that, we never do this except here. Maybe we should just point out that we are doing something different with this last paragraph, that we're finally looking at bias versus random. Although looking at this, it doesn't really look all that great with the p-value of 0.894. Just a thought. Y'all still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're apparently all still pondering.
Okay.
I think this is something we need to consider. I do think we should look across. And I guess that's why I think once we figure out what we're doing with these other tables, it will kind of help orient us with this. I think part of what we're struggling with is how to balance these dimensions. So if we find we can collapse across bias and random, then I think we should say that somewhere in the discussion and then say from here on out, you know, when we say the remainder of the discussion focuses on the 16 students who have interview and tests, we can say, make the point then, be like, and since we've also observed through all our analyses that this bias versus random dimension doesn't matter, we're going to collapse across that. Which actually, we don't even collapse across that. I mean, we still have that parsed out in table 12. But
right.
We can point out that our discussion and our analyses tend to collapse across that because it didn't really matter. I think we might need to come back to this because I think this is just the area we're still struggling with, and I think as we start to look into some more of these tests and kind of see what they will allow us to do and say, that might help us here. So I have that paragraph highlighted. I'm still not sure of the best place for it. I think I agree with the comment Tara had originally made, although it may not have been exactly this paragraph, but the similar paragraph where Tara had said, you know, this should come first and we'll say this is why we collapsed across it. So I guess it should be moved back up. But I'm not sure exactly where.
Well, I thought it should have, I was talking about that second.
Okay.
paragraph, and I thought it should have gone above the results where we talked about the interview and the versus the test data.
So kind of what I'm doing right now is there's the paragraph that starts the remainder of this discussion focuses on the subset, and then it talks about, I'm kind of moving it up there and then pushing down the of the 46 scenarios, which I'm not sure is the best place, but again, we'll just have to look at it. Once we figure out exactly what we're doing with that quote, we can figure out.
That is where I was thinking.
Okay. All right, that's where it is now. And we'll just have to come back to it.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Well, I guess what I was thinking was the last paragraph, the one that says when comparing to see if there is a difference, that one would go before the of the 46 test scenarios. And then we said that we also compared at an individual level, so the 9 of the 16 students would go after the compare to the individual level. That's how I see those two things fitting in, the way it's written right now.
I thought we had decided to delete one of them, though.
We did, but I'm saying that's where I see them, whichever one we kept in, that's where I see them fitting. Because one looks overall at all of the scenarios, and the other did look specifically at the individual results. So whichever one we want to keep, the first one would, the first of the paragraphs there would go before the 13 of 16, and then the other one would go of the 46 test environment scenarios. So I don't care which one we keep, but that's where I see them fitting.
And it's a strange question. I was kind of looking and comparing, because I just noticed that the I did was gone. So what happened with table 12 being edited and then table 13 being gone?
What I did is I actually decided that the total should be in the tables. Now that we've gone through, I think initially when we were looking at the original tables, I was so overwhelmed with them that I couldn't make any sense of them. And now that we've gone through and continued to refine and I'm starting to wrap my brain around everything, the analysis part became clear to me, and I realized that as I was reading it, I wanted to total everything. So I went ahead and put the total back in.
Why is table 12 then missing a row?
I got rid of the no opinion category.
And the totals don't add up, right?
No, I added the totals separately. I may have just copied. No, because those are the row totals. They should add up, right? Because I went through.
I'm looking at the very last total. There's not 32 people in that last column. There's only 28.
Okay, then that would be a part of the copy-paste error. But the other ones I should have done by hand. So I will.
We use some of these numbers in doing all the analyses, so then I have to change my numbers.
Yeah, that means all of them are going to be different because we have the complete table.
Well, here's my argument for this. We at no other point included those people because we didn't know where they belonged. And so we made the decision earlier on not to include them, and so I didn't understand why they were being brought back in now.
Because we were doing the paired analysis so we could compare their results directly. It didn't matter where they belonged. We could see how their results compared.
But we already have so much going on. Do we want to introduce a new layer back in, especially one which we had discarded earlier? Does it really add that much to the discussion?
One thing I'm worried about now is that we'll change all of the results, the discussion numbers, everything.
Yeah, because we'll have to go back through all the interview results are calculated with those complete tables. So we'll have to go back through and change that entire section.
Well, then I think at very least I can, since I deleted it, I can go back and pull up the version of the table that Tara sent out and put that back in. I think we need to address that explicitly then, that we are bringing those people back in and why we're bringing them back in, and maybe say because we had such a small sample of data for the interviews, we decided to include those as their own category. Otherwise, I think it's going to be really confusing why they just suddenly pop back up.
At least right now, based on the analyses that we've been doing, nothing has been based upon, I mean, not much of it's been based upon their opinion with the matter. And when we do, they don't get used anyway.
I'm not sure I follow.
I mean, most of our comparisons, we're doing bias versus random or testing versus interview. We're not looking at comparing opinion a lot.
Oh, now I see what you're saying. I'm sorry.
But I think we were doing more of those comparisons, then we'd have to be more worried about it. But since we're not,
well, I still think if we're gonna show them in the table, we're gonna have to address why they're there, because we say earlier in the paper that we didn't know what to do with those people, so we just excluded them, and now I'm kind of wondering, like, should we have included them as their own row in the previous part?
Well, the only reason we didn't include them as their own row in the previous part is because it wasn't part of our expectations table. That was the only reason we didn't include them, because we tried to mimic what we had in the expectations table.
Right. So, again, I guess I'm wondering, I mean, the sample sizes, I'm looking at the version of Table 12 from February 24th. There weren't, so what was it? There were five and four. So for the interview, there were four, I guess, scenarios. Are these, sorry, is Table 12 scenarios now instead of people? It would have to be, because it's over.
Yeah, that's scenario.
Okay, I see those. Okay, it does say that. Sorry. We're talking about basically, in my mind, we're talking about four scenarios out of 46. And
that's the context inclusion, not the number of scenarios. We're talking like 11.
Okay.
And we're getting rid of one of our paired ones, too, then. Because one of our paired was not.
For the interview, it's only four, right?
Yes. But for the test, and that's seven of them.
But if we get rid of those 11, that's going to change the entire interview test scenario table, because they were all of the numbers in that table, all the percentages were calculated with those included. That's what we're saying. It's not just a matter of changing the table, it's changing everything that we did for the interview data.
In the discussion or in Table 12?
In the discussion.
I do understand that. But I guess I still want to know, scientifically, based on our theory, based on our hypotheses, what do they add to the discussion?
Because once we got to the test versus the interview data, part of our discussion is saying that we are seeing a difference between the interview and the testing scenario, and it doesn't matter what their opinion is. We're seeing a difference now. It's not based on, we're not saying that because they have a strong opinion versus in the interview versus testing, we're saying no matter what their opinion is, we're seeing more people using irrelevant context in the interview versus in the testing environment. So I don't think there's any problem with putting those people back in at this point because we're not basing it off of them. We're saying this is something else that we saw, so it doesn't matter what their opinion is. We saw it consistently regardless of what their opinion is.
One thing I will say about that argument is actually not made in the paper. We need to, and actually that's probably something we need to address, and I think that's part of the discussion we were having about random versus bias. We also need to address the strength of opinion. Why did that dimension go away? So we need to sort out, I guess, that part of the discussion first. And then if you want to keep them in there, we have to make a case as to why.
I guess I don't see any reason why we wouldn't include them.
Because we already discussed above why we weren't going to. So if we're going to bring them back in, we have to say why we did.
But the only reason we didn't include them above is because of the expectations table. That's the only reason.
So what you just said is they don't fit into our theory. That's why we didn't include them. So why are we bringing them back in now?
Because when we get to our testing versus interview setting, we're saying that now we're seeing differences and it doesn't matter what their opinion is.
But we haven't said that. We're saying we're seeing differences. We haven't said it doesn't matter what their opinion is. And we haven't said because it doesn't matter what their opinion is, we brought these people back in essentially just to give us larger sample sizes. That's the reason for including them here. I mean, to some extent in the testing environment, we had more data. They were just adding noise to the data so we could get rid of them. If we want to say here, we're noticing that strength of opinion doesn't matter, and we want larger sample sizes here, so we're going to bring this group back in, that's okay. But so far, those two arguments, that strength of opinion doesn't matter and we need larger N, those have not actually been made in the paper. So we have to just explicitly state them.
That's fine. We can explicitly state it.
And then I think we need to have a better argument that strength of opinion doesn't matter.
Well, we can just compare each row.
Yeah.
70% versus 0 is going to be significant. 67 versus 21 is going to be significant. 80 versus 7 is going to be significant. So.
When I look at row or by column?
Well, she was talking about strength of opinion. So if I look at the interview versus the testing totals for each row, I mean, they're significant in each row. It's not going to matter.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable to just point out that it's a... a higher percentage, and it's always a higher percentage in the corresponding box in the interview setting than it is in the testing environment.
Jackie, I think we already talked about the columns in our discussion.
Okay.
We We just didn't talk about the rows.
I still think we need to do a slightly better job talking about the columns, though. Okay.
Okay.
Lee, do you have anything to say, add to this?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I wasn't trying to start a debacle. I was trying to make sure that our numbers were matching the tables that you're presenting.
No, you're totally right. And that was just a copy-paste error. And it's important to talk about. We want to have a good paper, so it's important to talk about all of these issues.
No, I mean, I really didn't care which one we did. I just wanted to make sure that we changed all our numbers if we had to.
So you combined tables 12 and 13?
Yes, I did, because I know I was the one who had suggested separating them, and I realized when I was looking at really tables 5, 6, and 7, and even 8, that I impulsively, like, I just wanted to know the totals, and so I was going through by hand doing the totals, and then I realized our readers were probably going to do the same thing. So I realized I was wrong initially with the whole no totals thing, because for some reason I was overwhelmed by the amount of the tables. So I realized I was wrong. I added those back in for tables 5 through 7, and then I figured since they would be used to that layout of bias, actually we need to switch bias and random for table 12 to make it match, but that's beside the point, sorry. Since they were used to the layout of bias random total or random bias total, that they would be okay with it in table 12. It wouldn't make it too overwhelming in table 12. So I went ahead and added it back in. I thought it made more sense that way. All right. So. All right, going back to the table, so we still have some things to write up and to add into the discussion. Going back to the discussion section then and looking at limitations of study design. This is where we're trying to make the justification for why we did what we did. And Tara had a comment about not really focusing on the by school. Like, that's the first time we'd mentioned the by school, and I agree. I think we need to go back and add those in as sentences. I think it's 1 to 2 sentences somewhere in the discussion that the results by school don't matter. Do you also
by school? Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so basically taking all the same tables we have and then looking to see were the results different by school? Were we seeing different patterns of reasoning or different amounts of context because of the student demographics? And for the most part, I think our answer is no. The last little bit to look at may be gender, which seeing a difference between Jackie's school and the other schools may be a proxy for gender, like she pointed out. So we can go back and add that to the discussion, and then I think that should address Tara's comment about, you know, this seems, at this point, it seems to be coming out of left field in the limitation section. So then I think that will make the limitations flow better.
We need to delete the 1987 Canold reference because we deleted the if we delete the paragraph above, we should put a note there.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I think that's the only spot it was referenced.
Yeah.
All right. It is deleted.
No.
We didn't delete above yet. Did we?
I did.
Oh, that's right, we did. Okay.
So I think that's it. So still a little bit of work on results and discussion, but I think this paper is shaping up really nicely. I think, you know, we've probably all faced various degrees of discouragement going through this because it's been a big process, but I think it's shaping up really, really nicely.
I was going to say, I hope I didn't offend anybody with a little humor I sent around.
I actually enjoyed it.
It just cracked me up.
Why, in the conclusion, do I really have to cite that? Isn't that well known?
Yeah.
I like the one where I spilled the beer on, like, you know.
Yeah, 3 days worth or 3 pages worth of data were wiped out when I spilled a beer.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I know I'm being very helpful. All right, so where do we go from here?
That is a good question. I think we all need to figure out how to test the dimensions, how to test bias versus random, and how to test strength, hopefully together, and then breaking them down and deciding if we can collapse across those, because I think that's going to have a big impact on where we go with the, some of the other issues we were having in the discussion.
Okay.
So Tara was going to look at data layout for CMH. I was going to see if our staff person had suggestions on data layout for CMH.
What were the three dimensions? Again, I'm trying to write them down.
So we have sample type.
Cone agree, strong disagree, neutral is the first. Random versus bias sampling is the second. And whether or not they used irrelevant context, so yes versus no, is the third. And then our column, our count data would be in the fourth column. But I think for CMH, I thought that to do that, you needed to have person-by-person results, and you needed to have a 1 or a 0 for every person. But I don't – that's what I thought you had to do for the CMH test. I didn't think that you could put them in as just the overall counts, and that's what I'm trying to find.
Well, if we realize you can't put them in as overall counts, that might actually be in – a somewhat easy fix in SAS, where I can imagine you have you just tell SAS to create a new data set where, you know, the first row, so let's say we have the data set has 4 variables, right? So there's the, I'm just going to call it the opinion thing, but that has conclusion wrapped up in it. So there's opinion, sampling, context, and then the count?
Well, it would have to have a 1 or a 0. It wouldn't be a count.
But,
and, yes, I can do that in SAS. Yeah, I can program it to do that. I just don't remember if that's how the data needs to be set up or not.
Right.
That's how I'm remembering I did it, but I'm not sure if that's correct.
Well, have you tried just one thing you could do after the call is just try opening up SAS, feeding it the data the way you have it with the counts and seeing if it works.
Actually, no, I can't because I have to be on campus in an hour, and it takes me 45 minutes to get there. But I can do it this weekend, maybe.
That works.
Once I get my homework done.
I'm not sure Carla meant, like, immediately.
yeah. I just meant, like, that may be before you do a whole bunch of research into it, maybe just try it and see if it works. Because if the data physically cannot be in that format, you'll get an error message.
Well,
and you'll know in a minute that you need then to go further.
Yes, I agree. The problem was that I was playing around with Enterprise Guide. So I had actually typed in the three-way table in Enterprise Guide, and that's why I was trying to figure out how to do the analysis using the drop-down menus from Enterprise Guide, which I could not figure out how to do.
Okay.
So, yes, I will just have to write a new program that does it, and I'll see if it works or not.
All right.
I was just trying to make it easy and just let Enterprise Guide write the program because all the other stuff I've written the program myself. But apparently it's easier to write your own program than figure out how to do something with this drop-down menu.
There are definitely times when that's true.
Yeah. So I figured it would just be as fast, you know, I'd throw in the table and have it run it, but I think it would have been faster for me just to write the program to begin with.
All right, so I kind of assignments for people.
Well, I will be honest, I'm not getting any work done over the next week because it is my spring break and my family is going on vacation.
Damn you, Herla.
Yeah. It seems like based on what we've talked about, a lot of the burden is falling on Tara's shoulders. But
I have spring break next week. Can we wait till next week? I'll have a whole week off to work.
Yeah. You mean like...
Yeah.
3 days from now next week or the following?
Like the following.
Okay. Well, that'll work, because then if you can produce the p-values that week, I'd be happy to work to try and incorporate them and add in some of this other discussion that we've been going through today.
Yeah,
so that might actually work really well.
Even if I'm the only place that we would go, we didn't get to see my husband's family over Christmas, so we might go see them, but that's fine. I'll just bring my laptop with me, and I'll work on it. It will give me something to stay occupied with.
Well, if you two are working on that, what would you like Lee and I to be doing?
Maybe just continue to look into this categorical data analysis thing and see, is CMH the test we want to be doing, or is there something else we could do?
Well, Jackie, you have the data set, and you have all my programs.
I believe so.
Right? Or do you want to see, you can see if you can figure out how to do it with a drop-down menu. Because you've been using Enterprise Guide, haven't you?
Minimally. I usually pull up ARCs, and I know how to use ARCs easier.
Well, do you want to run the table in ARC?
Attempt it.
Do you know how to do it in ARC quickly? If you have the...
I can look back at my old notes. I haven't done the CMH test since I took the class in 2004 or whatever it was. But I have my old code to look at.
So the way that I summarized it was I had, you know, just four essays, four SDs, and four neutrals in my first column, and then I had it out by random versus biased in my second, then yes versus no for each random versus biased in my third column, and then I had my count in my fourth. Can I run it in that form? Or does it need...
I think usually it wants the individual stuff, too.
Yeah, that's what...
We'll have to look at.
Yeah, I haven't done any categorical analysis in R. I've done everything with that in SAS.
I can try and play with it, too. I'm actually trying to learn R better.
Okay.
If somebody sends me the data.
You should have the Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, should I? Okay.
Yeah.
That says that, the all results, right?
What?
That's what it was called. It was called all results or something.
All results.
I don't think so. I think it was called, like, July... or something. I think it had a July in it or something, didn't it? I might have renamed it when I sent it to you, Jackie. I don't know. On my computer, it's labeled with, like, July, updated results July or something like that, because it was the final spreadsheet.
Okay.
But mine's
if
updated.
If I have an issue, I'll email you.
Okay.
But I'll see what I can do. I went through the R workshop at ESCOT, so I should be better with R.
Yeah, we used R for regression, but I've not used it for anything like categorical.
Okay.
Oh, but I have a huge R book. Maybe that will tell me how to do it. I forgot I had that book. I can look at that, too. Maybe it will be faster.
Okay.
All right. Are we all done?
We want to do 2 weeks out. Is everybody on break next week?
I'm not on break next week. I'm on break the week after.
Oh.
Well, I definitely can't do a call next Friday.
Well, yeah. No. Oh, come on. You don't want to do it from Disney World?
Nope.
Mickey can take care of the kids?
Nope.
We can tell.
I know my husband will be disinclined to watch the kids while I work on vacation. So, and I'm disinclined to work while on vacation.
No, this
is the first time we're taking a real vacation, just the four of us, like not just going back to someone's parents' house.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to actually enjoy it.
Okay.
Or is that not going to work for you, Tara?
The 16th, as long as we're not in Kentucky or West Virginia, that'll be fine. If we're in one of those places, we'll be driving back on the 16th, probably. I just don't know. My husband hasn't told me if we're going or not. It depends on whether or not he has his commitments done at work. So,
when would you be leaving if you left?
I have no idea.
Okay. I was wondering like if earlier in that week would be better for you.
I really don't know. It all depends because he has a bunch of stuff he has to get out, if he can even go.
So why don't you just email us sometime either earlier that week or that weekend and let us know, like once you know, let us know and decide. If you're able to do a call and you want to do the call, we can. Otherwise, we'll try and have it the week of the 19th.
Well, why don't we schedule it for the 16th, and then if something happens and I'm not going to be able to take it, I'll email you guys. Why don't we tentatively schedule it for the 16th? Because I'm guessing, based on the number of projects my husband is going on, that we're not going to be going anywhere. That's my guess.
Okay.
So why don't we tentatively schedule for the 16th?
Feel free to email in between if we find anything exciting about categorical data analysis.
Yes, I will.
hang on. I have 10 a.m. isn't going to work for me on the 16th. I have an oral exam for one of the master's students I have to give.
Being difficult.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. They need to have them done by March, so I've been slammed with a bunch of them, students desperate to get them in. And I can only do them on Mondays or Fridays. So Friday, March 16th at 10 a.m., I have an oral master's exam. It would probably be done by 11, but that's not guaranteed. And then I have one from 1 to 2, and then a faculty meeting at 3:30. So we could maybe either say tentatively 11, and worst comes to worst, I might be a little late, or 2:30 to 3:30.
Or when like is your class like?
My class is at 2, so I wouldn't be there till 3.
Okay. Then why don't we say, can we do tentatively 11?
I can do 11.
This is a good student, so I'm hoping the exam won't take more than an hour. I've been in long ones, but those tend to be with students who struggle. So we'll say 11 a.m. for the call. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Just when we have.
Can everybody else do 11?
Free the bird.
Mm-hmm. Freeze bird, okay.
I want to class on Friday, so.
All right.
Have it in my planner.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome. Well, Tara, enjoy your spring break in 2 weeks. Jackie, enjoy your spring break coming up. Lee, good luck going back.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody have a really good weekend.
Yep. You too. Enjoy your vacation.
Stretch me in San Diego.
Thank you. I will try.
Oh, and Herla, would you mind sending out, if you made updates to the paper, would you mind sending it out to us?
Yep, I will save what I have right now, and yes, I will do that.
This will be the most updated one?
Yes, I will send that. So that will come through shortly.
Good, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
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 Thank you. Please stand by.